welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters, who've been doing this for way too long, talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Night falls, I'm cast beneath her spell. Daylight comes, our heaven turns to hell. Am I left to burn and burn eternally? She's a mystery to me. Here comes. She's a mystery girl. She's a mystery girl. Oh, man.
She's crystal clear eyes there, man.
You can't, dude. Roy Orbison, there is no other. There you go, the man in the black sunglasses.
Anything you want.
That's you got it. You got it.
Baby.
Oh yeah, man. Song actually written by Bono for Roy Orbison, and then released unfortunately posthumously. So, just when he was coming back. Anyway, hello everyone again. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is Dave, the rock and roll DM, obviously. I'm a little bit of a loss here. I'm still thinking about that beautiful Roy Orbison rendition that I just
You're
did.
You're blown away by your own vocals.
I was haunting falsetto.
You can't. Another aside, Springsteen once said in his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction speech that he wanted to, when he did Born to Run, he wanted to write like Dylan, sound like Phil Spector, the record itself, and sing like Roy Orbison. And then he said, but no one can sing like Roy Orbison, and it's totally true, including the rock and roll DM, me. So anyway, she's a mystery to me. So why are we talking about that? Very good question. We actually got a listener question in from LoreDiver101, who goes by the actual name Isaac. So we're just going to say Isaac, but he is going by LoreDiver. So Isaac wrote in an interesting question. It's a bit of a long one, but it'll give us some context here. So he said, I'm running / writing a 1,500-year post-spell plague campaign where whether or not my PCs heal, kill, or accidentally kill Mistra is based on their choices in the game. Right now, they're still discovering what the campaign is even about. He does say they're at level 2, and that took 20 hours in real time, which we will also discuss.
Haze those players.
Yeah, but he says I'm planning on them fighting a Draco Lich at level 10 before they really understand what they're doing and the consequences of their choices. And the question is, am I being cruel by leaving them in mystery so long? And he says their choices at level 1 set them down this path while they were still on my railroad. When do I have to stop making riddles and let them know they're either working for or against an injured goddess? He does say that, by the way, they're mostly newbies at the table, and he is a first-time DM running this thought baby that made him a DM. He goes a little bit into some ideas about his campaign, and we might get into that in the episode too. But we're really just talking about, is he being cruel by leaving them in mystery so long? And when to stop making riddles and let them do their thing. So I have talked enough, and I'm going to throw it out to you guys. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to say no. But if you're leading your players are going down a path that may go against, how they want the world to go or how they want things to play out, I would ask a couple of questions. Are you really brewing an amazing plot twist? Like, this is going to be something that defines the campaign there. Or is this going to cause players to rage quit? Or, equally as bad, are they going to be like, I don't get it? And if it's any of the two or three, then you should probably kind of look at how the clues you're leaving, you know, down this trail you're taking them, like, how defined they are. Like, are they picking them up? Or is this going to be a total bad shock? It's just going to take away from the campaign and the engagement of the game when you get to that point.
Yeah, good points.
It's not a novel. You have to balance the player enjoyment on your lore dumps, right? On where you're going to place your lore. if they're having fun doing it, if they're having fun all the way up to level 10 before they get a real clear idea of what's going on, then cool. But if they're not, then it's really more serving the story than serving the enjoyment of everyone at the table, right? And to Tony's perspective, people don't understand what you're saying. Like, you have to continue to reiterate lore. You have to drop in additional history into it, into the next episode, in the next session, because those people, maybe if you're playing every day, but people just, you know, we understand it because we're writing it, right? We're living it. We want this story to happen this way, right? But the players, they may have different ideas about it. That, and I'm, the choices at level one part, I'm like, that's cool, but beware, because, you know, that's some session zero stuff where I'm going to be like, things that you do are going to, you know, even at the very beginning, are going to have magnitude and translate through to how this ends there, just because then they might be like, well, I was just saying that because I didn't know what I was doing, you know, at that point. But it's a, you know, I think in the end, it's like curating your party. Make sure that they're, this is the correct audience for what you want to do. It sounds like they're all into it. If they hung for
20 hours of goblin fights
to get to level two, which I rock and roll, but I mean, if it's doing how you do it, it's your world, but it's, if they hung for that long, it sounds like they're there, but make sure that they're going towards something, right? Like, it can't just be that we're going out and doing random things. There have to be some keys that there's something more going on. There's something deeper that this, like in this case, if you're healing or killing a god, like there have to be some level of ramifications in the real world. If it's Mystery with the application of magic, right? Is it diminishing? Is it growing? Is it causing some kind of effects in the world? Like, it doesn't even have to be lore drops. With many of this stuff, if it's something of that magnitude, it would have a visceral effect to your world that they could start to pick up on. Things are going weird. It's like the, like Chilt and the Death Curse, right? It sort of defines that area and that module and what you're going after there. It's something that you're sort of experiencing in the world. And then you find out more about the lore of it, but it has that kind of a, you know, you're able to experience it outside of it. You find out people are just dying off, right? And you don't have to go to a temple, you know, in the middle of a jungle to find out. It's happening in the towns around the world. So,
no, that was, that's actually quite excellent, because there is a ton of, to unpack between what you guys just said. It's kind of what I was going after as well. The first thing that did catch me was the level two, the 20 hours of real-time play to level two. I mean, that is so, Tony, you've talked about, you know, crawling over broken glass to get to level five.
First edition, buddy.
Yeah, in Thor, in some of Thorin's campaigns.
Okay,
right?
Fifth edition.
Right. So, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Like, Chris, as you said, especially if your players are into it, but if you're talking about all the way to level 10, and if that translates out, you're talking about like 200 hours of time that you want this gigantic, I see dead people and Bruce Willis has been dead the whole freaking movie reveal. Yeah. That is hard, dude. That is hard. And I make this point because, like, I'm thinking, I just last night I had session 9 in the girls' campaign where I've been doing kind of this hodgepodge. I used the Dragons of Stormwreck Isle as the intro adventure because they were, like, they were on a ship. They were kind of pirates. It just had to do with the background. And now I'm doing kind of a real kit-bashed, homebrewed version of Princes of the Apocalypse, because I always like something to draw off of. It's just easier for me when I'm having to, you know, not only work but then also plan the games. And if you're taking these brand new players and you are having right at level one, they're making these drastic decisions that they may or may not know. Chris, you brought up the idea of the session zero. They may or may not know that anything is actually happening yet, and you're developing this whole, oh, if you chose door one or door two, they don't even know, like, what does my second win do exactly? What exactly is a bonus action, right? I mean, they may or may not be, but, you know, I'm going to think if they're newbies, they're still even just getting the sense of the game. And the final thing I want to unpack here is that idea of reiterating. Thorin used to say, you want to get somebody to remember something, say it seven times. And if anything, you got to say it seven times per session. And then I bet maybe seven sessions later, they'll get it. Because in the Dragonlance campaign, I'm dealing with super experienced players, very involved, very willing to know what's happening in the world and where's the adventure and how do I find the clues to do this, because half the table are DMs as well. And I had to reiterate, even up until like last session when you guys are almost at the City of Lost Names, that Vogler, the whole invasion, was in essence just to get Vogler as a supply route towards the Northern Waste to be able to start exploring up that way, right? And I had to keep getting that in there because players have their own thoughts about like, well, what does this mean, you know? And also, like, constantly peppering the idea of where do the Draconians come from? Where do the Draconians come from? Where do the Draconians, you know, saying it in different ways until finally players go, oh, okay, that's what's happening. And then in character, they're playing this out. So, yeah, like that right off the bat, and you're putting in this level of time, it's that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a big lot.
It would be difficult, right? Like, it's it's a big take. Like I remember a lot when I was getting started, and you want to do this. I want to do Dune, right? I want to do a trilogy, a great space opera epic, right, with my story. But to your point, it's a novel. Then if you want to have a good campaign, there has to be something where it's tangible enough. Not doesn't have to be simple, but conveyable enough that people are going to understand what they're doing and what the stakes are and what it is that they're going after, versus they're just kind of showing up and they're having fun rolling dice, which is totally cool too. There's right, you know what I'm saying? But the players that you have that are into the lore are actually able to pick up on it. And you do a great job with it too, Dave, right? And it's, so it's not even a question of that. It's like, to your point, it's a question of that. Nuance is difficult in a spoken medium and in stuff like that. In the book, like I'm flipping back, I can flip, you know, oh, that was in chapter 3, and I can go back. During sessions, you're taking notes, but your head up there, oh, I got to roll this time. Something's happening over here. So you don't imprint the things the same way. So you have to keep it very simple and yet literally like keep on repeating it. Like if anything, I would start to introduce secrets earlier. Doesn't have to be whole lots of things, but bits of stuff just to keep them like it's like seeds that keep you going towards some reason to kind of be there. And
Tony, this makes me think just some of what Chris was saying. It makes me think of some of the issues you've talked about in your own gaming currently in the modern day. And this is coming from a guy who's been DMing for the last 30 years, right? In every edition known to man, except third, strangely. But regardless.
Only in video games. I never regret that because I heard that was really cool.
Even into the modern day where you realize, oh, I'm front loading so much freaking lore that I'm trying to put a fire hose into a drinking straw. And that's with players who are incredibly engaged in the campaign. We talked about it with the Storm Kings campaign. You even recently talked about it in the Journey to Ragnarok campaign. And we just had our return session after like a 2-month break, and you literally crafted a whole session where you just put us in kind of like doppelganger scenes of every major scene leading up through the campaign so we can remember what the hell is going on here, right?
I feel like that's an article I have to write about what happens when you take a long break from the game and how do you refresh everybody. You could do a really long monologue, or I could do a whole game about it and get everybody to remember all the things they did. But I will come back to that. Yeah, as far as new players with this, you're absolutely right. In my experience, new players are focusing on what? What are my abilities? Do I still have that? Is this a good time to use that and all that stuff? So it's really easy for them to have those other thoughts get lost in the background, like this other deeper plot. But if you're going to create a test as a DM, like if, for example, you're looking for an outcome, and I'm assuming this DM, and I think his idea is super cool, but if he's rolling, if it's a multiple choice and it's A, B, or C, and really the only answer that they want is A, well, you have to be able to live with the outcomes if they go with B or C. Because I got to tell you, in multiple situations I've played as a DM, like I ran a murder mystery, and I was convinced that, you know, they found the murderer and they were going to haul this person off to jail. Well, guess what? Nope. They sympathize with this person. They're like, oh, this person really got the raw deal. And they buried the case after they solved it. And I'm like, okay. But here's the problem. That's just a module. If you're running a whole game around that, that can really unhinge that. Like, what happens if someone like me tries to eat Mistara's soul? I mean, is that on the table? Because I kind of, you know, that's...
I think that's a very good point. And it's like the one thing that I continue to run into, and then I have to laugh about it afterwards, is, you know, choice and rolling in the game is important. But if you give someone the choice, like if I let you roll persuasion on this animal, this creature or whatever, and you nat 20 it, well, now all of a sudden I've actually opened up that door now and I have to let you walk through it, right? Because you did nat 20 it. It's not, you know, we're not slaves to it. So it doesn't have to be like you seduce the dire wolf or something like that. But I have to give it some tangible thing, because anything that I'm letting in there, anytime I'm letting you have choice, or that creates the opportunity for chaos, good creative chaos, but there is, you know, there is a degree to that. And especially if I'm making them at level one, my gosh, before I even understand the consequences of my choices, that's powerful.
With that said, I wanted to return to something. I didn't want to interrupt Tony as he was explaining, but it made me think again. Because again, these days, it's a little different these days, because you have a lot of, you have so much stuff like live play and things out there where people can go on YouTube or Twitch and they can see D&D being played. I mean, hell, D&D, WotC even released, Faster Purple Worm Kill Kill, the Matthew Lillard show. Where he has a rotating cast and they're just playing D&D adventures, right? I still haven't tuned in for anyone, but I want to.
I haven't gotten the invite yet.
Hell, you could even look up when Matt Mercer is running a game for Stephen Colbert, a couple of D&D one-shots, right?
There's a lot of examples of these.
Yeah, so people are coming in. So even with newbie players, it's very possible that they're coming in, and people oftentimes talk about like the Matt Mercer effect and all this kind of stuff, and I don't generally get involved in those because I think it's a nonsense argument. But what I think, you know, you might have players who are coming in already being like, ooh, D&D can be this super immersive, deep story, character arcs thing like I see on my YouTube or on Twitch or whatever, right? So they might be coming in going, this is what we want. We want to have this massive thing. And that might be what he's playing with. But in my experience, even with, like I said, the girls campaign, because I'm dealing with majority are brand new to role-playing games of any kind, much less D&D. And even now, like, they're doing very well, but like, I'm slow leveling. We're only session 9. They just got to level 4 last session because it just partly just the way the milestones were happening. But I also don't want to level them too quick because, as we know, that's a lot of stuff you have to now remember, you know, and you're playing a druid. Well, good luck with that, you know, as your CR on your wild shape changes and your spells change and you're this, you did it, right? And they will still at times sometimes, and I don't fault them for this, Ed, whatsoever. I don't want it to come out like that. But they'll be like, okay, which dice is that again? You know, like, okay, roll me a D10. And they're like, okay, which one is that? And then Bonnie will be like, it's the spaceship, you know? Because like the shapes even of the dice can sometimes be like, I'm still figuring that out, much less this weird character sheet, and I'm imagining this character in this world, and as the DM you're like, ooh, I can. And I did the same thing when we got back into it and I did that Pathfinder game for you guys. I had these massive ideas, and I think maybe 10% of it came, and I'm being generous with myself, I think 10% of it might have come out to you guys. You know what I mean? But in my mind, it was this world-spanning thing that, you know, and you guys were like, cool, so I just want to hit that orc, you know, type of thing.
No, there's definitely something to it, is that it's the type of audience. If they're big into the lore, then absolutely. But that's a ton of stuff. And it's only, like I said, it's not a novel, right? So it's the spoken medium. So it's like trying to convey an idea to somebody. It's like trying to teach somebody. They say like you don't really know something until you can teach someone else to do it. And that's because it's really difficult to try to explain something to somebody, especially in that, in the moment, yeah, well, in a short amount of time, right? And to have them understand it without having to re-explain it or other things like that. And you're multiplying that by 5 people at the table, by big, huge gaps of time between game, probably. I mean, they may play relatively often, but These people have lives. They just showed up beforehand. They're thinking about things at the table. Cell phone's popping. I got to pick up something on the way home, right? I'm looking at this. I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot to run this. Oh, what does this spell do? Because we even do that sometimes, right? We'll bust open the player's handbook and we're like looking through something there. So you're not even 100% heads up at that point because there's a lot of things going on. So it's easy for me to understand how the arc of Return to the Further is working, right? I know this. I have titles for all the stupid things, right? Because I'm just sitting here typing it in freaking Google Drive. But it's like I have to make sure that I'm keeping on like asking the question, like, do the players actually understand this, right? And see if they actually start to parrot back the things that I'm dropping out there. Like when Lenny started to talk about Aemon and the Great Prince and some of this other stuff, it was like, okay, he's starting to get a general understanding. I still think there's stuff that I think is completely understood that probably isn't 100% understood just because it's that much different, right? It's a, you know, it's someone telling you a story around a fire with five other people, right? And they keep cutting in into the story, right? And like interrupting and adding their own little bits there. So it's a lot to take in. Yeah.
Yeah, no, if you're looking at it with new
like
players,
a weird episode of Drunk History, right?
Kind of, right? We're conditioned at that because we're running it, that we understand it better, but it could be confusing.
Just imagine, like, if I was doing Jurn and Ragnarok, and I did the reveal. I won't say what it is for any of the DMs who are running this or any of the players in there, but I revealed who, in the Midgar section of the campaign, who the big villain was. And if I had new players there, they would have been like, that meme where the cat's going, huh? Like, it would have been like, okay, I guess you're the villain. But this villain had been building up to that point for, like, all 10, 11 sessions. There was things this person was doing behind the scenes and manipulating things that brought us to that point. And honestly, even with my – as a whole, my players are very – like, the most experienced I could possibly ask for at that table. Because we had breaks and stuff – even that, like, was tough. It lost some of the impact of that real plot twist moment. To have that, hey, you exactly like you're saying, I've been dead this entire movie. Well, right? But that was like a two-hour movie. It wasn't like, I mean, how long has the Ragnarok campaign been on? 60 hours? It's difficult to catch those details.
No, and I think, to your point, right, you had to have her monologue up a little bit, right? You had to... like you had to provide some of that stuff to make sure that everyone understands at this point. And that's another important thing I think that you bring up is that, so you have like your level 10 spot with Dracolich. If you're going to have these lore drops, make sure when you drop it, like you stop everybody and you like before you get on the bus, like you make sure that you count, you have all 10 kids with you, make sure that everyone understands that this is something of significance. And this is something you want to write down or put on your character sheet or something, because this is something that, is an important, this isn't just things that happen random day to day. This is something that's, you know, important for you to remember for the enjoyment and the continuation of the adventure. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, the enjoyment's probably the most important part, because like despite like we as these intellectual DMs, like the three of us at least believe that we are, you know, we have like these great plots and these great story arcs and all this depth and lore. Meanwhile, someone's making a dick joke and then we're ordering food and all this stuff. They're laughing about something stupid. Yeah, then somebody knocked all their dice off the table and all this stuff and everybody's laughing and that's great. And we're going to continue to play. And that is ultimately the most important part. So no matter how this twist goes for this DM, as long as they're still engaged and happy and liking it, then fantastic. They should just have some opportunities to really, you know, kind of see where this is going to have the ramifications and the gravity that he's hoping for.
Yeah, I just jotted something down here. It actually made me think, because it's back to there's a great episode of Running the Game with Matt Colville where he does this whole story of these two campaigns that happen. Like this guy, John, originally ran this campaign. And in essence, he's telling the story of The Hobbit, you know, and it had to do with how the players were kind of involved in creating the adventure. They were like, whoa, well, you're going to be a dwarf? Oh, I'll be a dwarf too. Maybe we'll be brothers. Oh, cool. And they're making this, oh, well, there's this mountain on this map. Maybe that's where our ancient, you know, family treasure is, type of thing. And he tells this story about one, the Hobbit being the players have kind of driven the story forward and the DM has worked with that. And then he goes where You know, they come back the next year and they hear about this amazing campaign that he run, but he starts to run Lord of the Rings, and it turns into this, no matter what you do, you're taking the ring to Mount Doom. Like, I don't care what choices you make, you know, and he does this whole thing. It's a really good video. If you guys go check it out, I'll link it in the, as he says, in the doobly-doo. What it made me think of is what we're talking about here, which is the difference between your reveal and their reveal. So your reveal may or may not matter at all, because they may or may not give two flying fucks about your overarching campaign. And this has nothing to do against your storytelling or your plot development or anything, but they are not invested in the same way. Now, their reveal, that one they're all ears for. And that's what I learned the most, especially over this very, very intensive gaming time over the last, God, however many years it's been now, is their reveal is so much more powerful. The three that I just jotted down here was the reveal in the Curse of Strahd campaign. There were two. I had the reveal about the gentleman, Thorin's patron, where I had this huge reveal of he was actually Hearsome, the Satyr prince, and he, you know, this whole thing, and he wanted to, in essence, like grab the nuke, right? Now, the gentleman was completely crafted by Thorin. He said, I want to be, my patron is the man with thistledown hair from Glenbogle, and the idea of who this person was. So I went with that and was able to develop things to create a reveal that had to do with his reveal, not my reveal. And it played into the story still, right? Scar, you know, the reveal of Scar actually being like a reincarnated Knight of the Silver Dragons, and he was actually Alarid Gwillym. So Sir Godfrey Gwillym was the their ally,
fighting partner.
Yeah, the ally that you guys pulled in the Taraka deck. So I said, oh shit, I'll just make this weird undead revenant his long lost brother, who's in a relationship with Vladimir Horngard, right? And like this whole thing, right? But it played into you reforming the Knights of the Silver Dragons. That's your reveal. And then the best one so far, which was the reveal we had in Dragonlance with Rasguedo, where the whole Wood Whisper idea that you gave me of your father that you're searching for, all of a sudden one day I went, oh shit, he's going to be Loazette, and they're going to meet this Treant out in the wastes that's going to be like, well, now I'm Wood Whisper. What are you talking about? You know? And that, for me, that was a great reveal, but it wasn't my reveal, it was your guys' reveal. And that's where it really, because at that point, you don't have to count the kids getting on the bus. You don't got to like make sure, okay, all my ducks, you just say it. And they're like, oh crap, what just happened to my guy? You know, that's my guy, that's my reveal. So it's that difference between like I'm saying, your reveal and their reveal.
I think you make an interesting point there, is that it's, if you find ways to tie lore to the people there, because in many ways, those were in some manner continuations of the Strahd story, whether it be Argenvold's told and stuff like that, what Phineas was going through. So I think that's a very good point, is that if you tie it to it, it has some weight. Like when I, like Loazette, like I was like, yeah, I was texting Star Wars memes to everybody for a thing. Like, no, that's not
true. That was
true.
Pretty funny.
That's impossible. Dude,
it literally was just on last night. I flipped it on. It was Return of the Jedi. And it was the moment when Luke comes on thing and he's talking with Vader, like at the little landing spot.
I got a sense of good within you, Father. Yeah. That's awesome.
So I would say that if they do choose the wrong path, I wouldn't put the screws to them. I mean, of course, you're going to have them come back in some way. But back to Chris's original point. So Mistara is wounded, or she's destroyed or wounded or trying to make a comeback. Is, like, magic weakened in this world? Is it dying? Like, what's happening? Like, you were saying, like, you know, with the Jungles of Chult campaign, like, no one could be resurrected. Like, in the world itself, like, some obvious great thing, like with Dave with Dragonlance, like, magic flatlined. So, like, are the people who can use magic in this game special in some way? Like those are, like the real hard ties. Like, for that kind of a quest, I'd, like, have, like, someone like Dave has with the Gold Moon character in his game. Like she's married to that plot. There's no way she's going to deviate from that plot. In fact, I was evil, like, three-quarters away from the game, and she talked me off the ledge. But, like, nobody really understood or knew that. So, like, where does that... Like, that should be, like, real hard stakes that are obvious and tangible that bring them into there.
That's an excellent point. It's actually one of the things I was going to say earlier, too, because we talk all the time. I mean, Chris, you and I both do it a ton now with the Secrets and Clues, Mike Shea's idea, just because it's such an easy way to have like some lore there. But what I've actually started to do with that, Tony, in this way is, like, for instance, in Dragonlance, five of the Secrets and Clues are written Razguedo, Eva, William, Mikros, and Adrian. Right. I literally write your guys' names and then I'm tying a secret or clue to your character's thing. Like either I can reveal it to you or it's still amorphous enough that it can be revealed in different ways or from different people. But it has to do with your stories or things that you're involved in that you will want to take ownership of and to drive your own story with. Tony, it's a great example, like you're saying. What does happen in a world like this? And what are some without having your big reveal like that? You want to keep certain things to the vest. I get that. But how are some ways that you can easily seed this stuff that will drive the adventure? Like if you have magic users, how are they constantly being reminded that something is happening? Right. Just like in Dragonlance, like you guys have met one cleric, right? Like, and it's in your party.
One.
Well, she's it right now. Eva is the only true cleric that you are aware of in the goddamn world, and everyone is. So that's constantly driven home. So yeah, in this type of thing, how much can you do without doing the reveal, but to seed that reveal? Because the more you can seed it, the more you can throw things down, clues, to let them, because if they come to it even, that could be even instead of you doing the ta-da moment, if they do the ta-da moment, that's no less powerful, right?
Absolutely. And it has to have some sort of visceral effect on the world. Like that would be the whole reason why you would be doing it in the first place, right? You would have to say, if any of the great stories, Lord of the Rings, The Shadow is Rising, right? People started to see things before they were doing this, right? There was a shadow in the east. You know, there's always an overriding thing that's causing something that's driving you to this. That's the hallmark of your adventure, whatever module you're running. This is what's happening in the world. It doesn't have to be as dramatic as the Death Curse or something like this where Mystra, but there's something going on, right? There's a war coming, so things are happening. Forces are marshaling, things are doing this. Something has gotten stolen, so something is missing from this thing. A power is missing. There has to be there's always some kind of effect on the world. If there's something of a world-shaking magnitude where it sounds like it's like a 1500-year spell plague thing, like it sounds like it has a grandness to that. So there would have to be some level of, you would just start to run into it, draconians, like in Dragonlance, like, all of a sudden you start running into draconians and stuff. You don't totally know what's going on, but you have to start running into them eventually because they can't just all show up at once. I mean, I guess they could just boom, just drop from the sky at times, but
no, I mean, right.
You know, the lore is something, but the world itself is telling you what's going on, right? Like you're going around, I can't cast spells here. There's something going on there. There's something more to it. Then I find out, oh, hey, it's because Mystra is injured or something like that. But it's like show me versus tell me kind of, right? Like it's this world is telling me that there's something wrong and then I find out about it through the lore. So
yeah, that's a great it's what I was doing, like you were just making the example, Chris, with Dragonlance in two ways. One, the divine magic not being in the world. So I even had the player Scott was even super into the idea because he wanted to play this whole like character that didn't really want to take on that mantle. So he was a cleric from level one, but wasn't playing as such and was kind of trying to hide it as being just a fighter until like, you know, the reveal itself. And then the same. And also I had player buy in with, like, for instance, with the bard, I said, OK, you can't take any healing magic. You know, you can do all the others. And you're like, OK, no problem. You know, like, I understand that. You thankfully got some access to it with your loot, you know, because at some point, like at some point,
it was
point,
a little bit just, more dangerous than.
At some point, it's just being a dick DM if you don't ever let them have access. Right. But and then with draconians, right, like they're a major part of the plot. So right from session two, you guys ran into them. But you didn't know what they were or anything like that. Your characters would not have come, but there was this seeding piece by piece, this constant seeding. Ooh, well, they're only metallic. Ooh, well, they're this. Oh, they're that. They're this. There's different types, you know. You won't ever see any chromatic ones, you know, that type of stuff, little by little by little, until finally the reveal. And you guys kind of pieced it together yourselves after I gave you enough of the clues that of what was happening, how the Draconians were coming about, you know.
But we would, like, to your point with Draconians, we would encounter a bronze Draconian or something like that. Like, it wasn't like someone told you, like, hey, there's bronze Draconians out there, so watch for them. Like, you would encounter them, and then we would take a look at them, and different things would happen and stuff like that. Right, there was right. a level of, right, like, they had a different kind of thing to them, a different kind of thing that sort of defined the enemy for it, or at least what you assume
different
is the
ways they would
threat,
explode
you
know? When they died. So, this one paralyzes you, but this one just frightens you. I don't know. This is so crazy.
Fortunately, none of them explode with, like, nails inside of them, because that would have been really screwed up.
It's actually one thing, as a very small tangent. It's one thing, like, their death throes aren't bad, but the death throes from, like, the original Dragonlance, like, the novels, were, like, so much more, like, really, like, fear-inducing, because it would, like, when they would turn to stone, like, your sword is now stuck in that stone, like, so screw you, like, figure it out kind of thing, you know. But that was so much more first edition, you know. That was just so it's getting about that time, though. But a great way, so we're going to do some final thoughts here, but what would, for all of us, what would be, like, at this point, Isaac is where he's at in his game, and it sounds like the players are into it, but what's your best advice, final thoughts, for kind of this, like, this keeping secrets idea? How long do you do it? You know, how do you seed it? Where does he go from here with it?
Well, I've stated in the previous podcast, if you keep a secret for too long, then eventually you run the risk that people are disinterested in this. But in this particular case, he's got an engaged group here, and that's fantastic. I would start putting out there that, like, how the lack of magic is affecting the world. Is spell casting having issues? Is it less potent? Are they on a clock? Is magic actually going to fade? There needs to be stakes surrounding this. Even if they need to stop and figure it out, you're not going to spoon feed them, but there is a reason why the magic is starting to diminish, lessen, weaken. It could completely be snuffed out at some point entirely. That's what I put back in, even if you don't reveal it to them. That is a pretty strong clue. That is about as strong a clue. They started this game. There is magic. Now the power of this magic they've been relying on throughout the whole campaign is now failing. And you have to figure out why. Go.
You have to balance the idea of lore. You have to show them. So if you have these secrets and things, if there's bits about this spell plague thing, about the Mistra there, things start to happen to them. They're attacked, you know, in case Dragonlance, you're attacked by Draconians, right? In Shelt, people start dying off because they can't resurrect. So things have to start happening and start to, you know, think of them less as secrets and clues. You should have some secrets and clues, but these are, like, events and things. These are the meat of the story. Like, I want to give you little bits of box text, but we all find out, like, we all love box text. Like, that's the DM thing. Like, DMs just naturally, like, they're always beautifully little crafted things, but no
one loves
box text.
I just get excited anytime I see box text.
Besides you at the table, right? Like, you always, hold on, let me give you, because this just sets it perfectly, right? And in your head it does, because you're reading it and absorbing it. You read it before. They don't. So package it up simpler and make it show me. Like, if there's a threat, if there's Draconians, then they should start showing up in the world, because otherwise it's not really a threat. And I'm just kind of doing something until I find this little slip of paper that says, oh, there happens to be a little bit more of a mystery. Go to this spot there, which is also a good way to do it, right? You know, this random hotel. But I think there have to be things, like, make them more, less about secrets and clues, which are important, and more about events and things happening in the world, because, you know, that are drawing you towards adventure, encounters with people and stuff like that. Drop your lore from things happening versus finding books and stuff, which you can still do. But I think that's how you kind of help this and keep it moving, especially if you're going to take that long to really reveal it all and drop your big thing. Because by that point, they're going to know that Draconians are bad, or that, whoop, the resurrection doesn't work. There's something going on. And then all of a sudden now at the end, I find out that it's this. I'm not going to drop it in case people want to learn Doom of Annihilation. But it's like there's a visceralness to it. And it's even all of us are fall into that, is lore is a really awesome thing, but lore is like reading. Lore is reading box text in a lot of cases. You know, real lore is what you experience in the world, and what players can tell you about it afterwards is what the real lore of the story was, right? It's what the listener finally got and was able to process out of it. So, you know, make sure that you not simplify it, but make sure that you get it across to them. Say it 7 times, do that, show them, and it will make it a lot easier for you to be able to have less worry about whether they're getting bored by it, because they're going to be engaged and they're going to want to ask questions about it being versus you telling them when it's time to ask questions.
I'm going to go back to my thought of the difference between your reveal and their reveal. So, like I said, I've started to do where even in my prep, when I'm doing my quote secrets and clues, just ideas that I can seed things that I want the players to pick up on. There's ways that I can seed that into adventures, adventure after adventure after adventure, session after session. And what I've started to do is I literally list out whoever the characters are in that game, I list their name, and then I'm going to tag something next to them that either has to do directly with their backstory and how it ties into the world, or with how the world is going to affect them or reveal something that would be probably of interest to them, where they're going to take ownership of that and they're going to take that initiative and help drive that story forward. Because as much as you feel like you have this big reveal coming up, if you haven't set it up where they're invested in it, then it's just going to hit this big old boom. It's just going to hit real flat. That's kind of what we've gotten to here. So you want to be setting it up, and you have plenty of time. It sounds like you still have about 180 hours of time to build this out into what you want to do with it, your reveal of it, but tie them into it. See how they're interacting with the world and tie all of their stories into it so that they have this level of investment in it, and that they're doing some of the lifting for you and they want to find out. They're piecing it together. And if they get the reveal, then that's awesome too, even if you didn't get to say it, because you still helped to craft that whole thing that was happening, you know? So even if you knew that Bruce Willis was a ghost halfway through the movie, it's still a crazy ass story, right? Even though you got it, you know, if anything, you feel like a little special because you figured it out early, you know, like in Clue, you already know who the person is, you know, second turn, whatever. Anyway, that's going to be it for me. Isaac, thank you very much for the question. And for anyone else out there, with questions, we are DMs with problems. We like to help DMs with problems. So you can always reach out to us. You can get us at 3wisedms.com and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach out to us directly by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And you can reach us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're very active on those sites. You know, I don't know how much you might need to do it for your reveal, but you're playing D&D, so you need to have some dice, okay? I didn't have a good segue. But if you are in the market for dice, and who isn't, feel free to visit our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You can enter the code 3WISEDMS10, the number 10, in there and get 10% off your order. So that's pretty nice as well. Yeah, like I said, that's going to be it for us this week. So as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
Today's episode was from a reader question. If you would like to have us answer your question, please send it into 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field, or talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. We're very active in all those social networks, and we'll do our best to answer your questions or work them into the show. If you do like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice. And if you can, give us a review. You know, tell your friends. Really appreciate it. We've been growing by leaps and bounds, and that's really because of you. Thank you so much. The feedback and the support you've given us means everything to us. So thank you again. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on 3 Wise DMs.